You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Francis Albert Sinatra.
Wake up, Tucson. Here's Christy Simone. Dude.
So my boy Mike, who's owns Metropolis Salon over there.
Yeah, sure.
He hit me on Facebook yesterday. He was in the middle of reading the Matthew Schwartz Confessions of an Investigative Reporter.
So that book that we had yesterday, which was fabulous. Yes,
Matthew Schwartz. If you just missed the last hour, we'll go over those numbers again about your chances of dying of COVID. We have. Our friend of the show, Jackie, said, OMFG. I don't know what that means, OMFG.
Uh-oh.
You're on fire today. You're doing a great job right now. If only my family would listen.
Right? They're all freaking out. They're all hiding in the house, man. Behind their mask. It's weird.
Well, we got to do it. One of the tough parts of this job is we've been supporting local restaurants in this show for almost 11 years. And we feel like we were one of the pioneers of radio, bringing you the local food of the last 11 years. And in this day and age of what's going on with our brothers and sisters in the restaurant business, we are thrilled to keep showcasing them. And this is one that they're making their debut on the show. Mm-hmm. One of the more interesting names in the restaurant business and on the show, on the line right now is Brandon Sue from The Blind Pig. Brandon, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Tell me about, let's just start with the name. Let's get it right off the thing. Tell me, why is the pig blind? That's what I want to know first and foremost.
So there's a lot of definitions for the blind pig. And the one that we choose to reside with is the blind pig was a term used in the 1920s during the Prohibition to refer to a joint that was tucked away, hidden, that sold alcohol. And we kind of felt like there was a connection, whereas we are also kind of hidden and tucked away from the main streets of university where we're located. And it also has, the name is also very fitting for our barbecue theme.
And they're in that little spot, kind of faces the Marriott University. It's where the Fix place used to be.
Mm-hmm. Right down yeah. A little, yeah.
He's right across the way in the heart of that neighborhood. Yes, Ed Alexander.
It's between Chipotle and Baccio and down that little way.
He's behind Baccio, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just north of Baccio.
Yeah.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. So, Brandon, so what did you do before you opened this place?
I'm actually a student. We actually took over the Fix's place in May. And renovated throughout the summer and opened up just in time for the new school year in August of 16th, 2019.
So what made you think if you were a student, what's your degree in?
Biology and biochemistry.
That's why you do need to know that to make good barbecue, guys. I just want to tell you that. Now, so what made you, so with your biology degree, what made you think you could go into the barbecue business? What were you doing before this? Do you have any food experience? I mean, there's got to be a story in here.
Our family is very food-oriented. I grew up making food with my mom of all different cultures, whether it be Asian, Western cuisine. It was one of my grandfather's dream was to open a restaurant. He passed away 2 years ago. And my father thought it would be a great idea to open up a restaurant where I went to school. And that's kind of how we just took the ball and ran with it.
Now, definitely, you saw, so the barbecue in that area is the idea. You saw no one in that main gate square really doing barbecue. Was that the opportunity?
Yeah. We saw that Red's was previously there, and there was kind of a hole that needed to be filled regarding the barbecue scene.
So how would you describe the kind of barbecue it is? And when I go to the menu, what am I experiencing? Are you just a straight ahead barbecue? How would you describe?
So, we are not what you would think your traditional sense of barbecue. People would think, barbecue, you would smoke your meats, But for us at the Blind Pig, we braise our meats, but we still do the traditional dry rubbing process and searing the meats, and then we slow cook and braise our meats. And that goes for all our meats, the pulled pork, the brisket, the St. Louis pork ribs, the chicken, and as well as the beef ribs.
So we're not smoking.
No smoking
braising.
Involved.
So what made you go to the, what do you like about the braising technique over smoking?
In my opinion, and everyone else, some will think differently, but I personally think it keeps a lot of the flavors of the meat inside. So you taste a lot of like the fats of the meat, the flavors of the meat itself. So not so much is lost drying it out.
So what you dropped off today for us was the St. Louis ribs, which are excellent.
I can tell which one those are. Sweet St. Louis ribs. Yum.
So tell us about the char siu burger, which seems to be one of your more popular ones. What's on the char siu burger that you brought us?
So the char siu burger, it kind of represents how we fuse different types of cooking together. Char siu is kind of a Cantonese-style barbecue, and we kind of harness the flavors from char siu and incorporate it into our ground meat, and we make it into a patty, let it marinate, and that's what you have right there is a char siu burger.
So looking at the menu, I mean, lots of variety on this menu, right? Because you got pork ribs, beef ribs. You can do a half home style Cornish hen. Nothing better. I just like saying the phrase blind pig burro, right? Which is hilarious. but then you're doing a Carolina chicken taco that has a sriracha mayo on it. You know, brisket tacos, and then you're doing, you know, like I said, you're doing
curry chicken,
pulled brisket stack, fried pollock sandwich, which you don't see often using that. Well, people saying they're using that fish, which is a great fish for a fish sandwich. So what's your top three sellers?
I'd say our top three sellers, because majority of our clientele, I'd say, are students, and they love a deal, I guess, per se.
Sure.
So our sandwiches are our hottest category, pulled pork being our first, brisket, char siu, and then our crispy chicken sandwich. And then those who would want to kind of indulge themselves in ribs will get ribs, yeah.
We're talking to Brandon Sue. He's the owner of the Blind Pig over in the University Main Gate area just north of Baccio, right across the street. Well, you're going to be right next to the brand new building next to the Marriott, which will be a whole other thing of residence. Let me ask you this question. Ed's on your Facebook page. You have two things with the, quote, secret menu. What's on the semi-secret menu that's sitting in your restaurant?
So our secret menu, my background is I'm Chinese, Hong Kong born. So a lot of me growing up, my mom cooked Asian cuisine for me, and I felt I should introduce it to the community and have everyone taste what my culture is like. So we originally did want to open up a Chinese restaurant, but we found a way to incorporate a secret menu where we can have our Asian cuisines as well as our barbecue cuisine.
All right, one last question for you.
Don't tell Huckleberry there's a secret menu. He'll be going through the back door.
Down boy.
I'm just saying.
My last question. Now, first of all, you can go to blindpigtucson.com to find out more. Brandon, what is the situation takeout delivery dining with you guys? What's going on?
So despite dine-in restrictions being lifted in our state, we are still remaining takeout and delivery only, just so we just want to kind of gauge the situation and for our safety as well as for customers.
And my last question for you, I ask this of everyone, I need your favorite two or three favorite local restaurants that you like to eat at that's not your own place.
My favorite local restaurant, I'd say, is Charles Del Rey. They have fabulous seafood. And Charles Steak, in my opinion, the best steakhouse in Tucson.
Look at this guy. Gary Hickey's going to send you a couple of dollars for that promotion. Good job, buddy. Well, Brandon, good luck. And hopefully I think we'll be good. The students will come back and you guys will be able to keep doing the good work that you're doing. All right?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Brandon Sue, the Blind Pig.
Good stuff.
Over in Main Gate Square. Brandon, we'll talk to you soon. TheBlindPigTucson.com. Thanks to Visit Tucson for all of their support getting out the word for these restaurants. The Wakeys are amazingly, amazingly loyal. And what our owners love from you guys is that you're proud to say you heard them on Wake Up Tucson. And that's something I keep hearing from a lot of our owners. So keep doing that. Complete the circle, as Darth Vader said in episode 4. All right. When we come back, we'll do a real little bit of a recap on the you're not going to die from COVID. And then I have my number 10 of the top biggest failures of leadership. Instead of people naming their top 10 albums, I'm naming my top 10 basically losers in leadership in Pima County. So Ed Alexander, Christy Simone, you're on 10:30 of The Voice, local news and talk.
It's the band, Big Pig.
That's true. Perfect. Big Pig after Blind Pig. Wake up.
That barbecue was good. They're good stuff. But I need some Duran Duran. That's good stuff.
Absolutely. Cherry ice cream smile.
What?
That's what he says.
Oh.
790-2040 is the phone number. One of the Wakeys embedded at the University of Arizona, I can't say his name, sent me the you are fired up today. Great job. And I said, thank you. Just channeling all of our collective frustrations.
No, really. Let us out.
One of my gifts or curses is D. Simone says the things that you all wish you would say out loud.
Right?
You know.
But it happens.
And
yep.
So this has been a collective thing. This is all the conversations I've had with friends across the country, right? And especially being from New York, I have so much family and friends who are at the, quote, ground zero of all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even they're done with being trapped in their homes. They're done with it. And they see what an idiot Cuomo is. They're, you know, he's not some big savior out there. So let's talk about, real quick. I was talking with a friend of ours yesterday about Biden, right?
Dirty old Joe. Dirty Joe.
And so this whole thing that says, if you don't support me, you ain't black, right? That was the line he gave to Charlemagne the God, is that his name? I think that was the name of the host. I got to come up with a cool name like that.
I know.
Chris.
Yeah.
It's nice. I like it. Very proud of it. I got to come up with a better name than, you know, my nickname in basketball was D-Train. Right? Because I used to drive to the hoop and lead with my face. That's why my face is so scarred up and beat up. I got to come up with something like D-Train the Demigod or something like that. I don't know if that'll play well. So what's going to happen to Joe?
They'll prop him up and run him for president.
Joe is going to get aced at the convention.
Yeah.
And I don't think... I think what they want is Joe's going to resign.
Really?
That's what I think. But the problem is with the Democrats, been their problems the whole time, and that's why they're dragging us through COVID hell right now, is they got no one on the bench.
They're dragging their feet. They got to figure out what they're going to do next. This is it.
They got no one on the bench.
Nope.
I mean, look who I remember last autumn.
Dan Amir of some city or something like that. They're going to run for president. Nobody's ever heard of this person.
Yeah, what happened to Mayor Pete? Remember Mayor Pete?
You're mayor, now you're going to be president? I don't think so. It's like Rahina. Oh, never mind.
So I think what's going to happen, and remember Kamala Harris, you know, that's the one who just came up with the censorship that you're not allowed to refer to the flu as Chinese flu or Wuhan flu.
Yeah, this will be a great leader.
Because that's racist?
Yeah, great leadership. We'll just make up other stuff. It's okay.
It's like me complaining that we haven't passed a law that bans, you're not allowed to say Italian mafia, right? Even though most of them, you know, kind of came from Italy and Sicily. But anyway, Joe Biden, I think they would like, I don't know who, Cuomo's not it either, okay? Because they're going to take him shoving those poor people back into the nursing homes, and that I think that kind of knocks him out as a presidential candidate. I think Joe's going to resign, and I'll get to Jack in a second. Joe's going to resign. I don't know who's the best. Maybe Jack will give me the answer, but he's going to say this. You know, you dirty old dogs, due to my health and this COVID thing that Donald Trump should have took care of.
Right, absolutely.
I think Trump purposely let Wuhan flu, sorry, I can't say that, Kamala, coronavirus into the country so I wouldn't have to run for president and win the whole damn thing. So,
because it's all about him. Yeah.
I'm going to, due to Donald Trump's bad management of coronavirus, I'm going to force, due to health concerns, to pull out of the race.
Let's go to Jack. Jack's going to Jack may give me a bench player here. Jack, good morning. We got about a minute.
The bench player is Hillary. They're going to get rid of Biden at the convention in some way, and Hillary is sitting there waiting. She can't wait to run.
You know,
she's got the money, the expertise, and the Democrats all love her. And they want a woman president.
You know something?
Making sense, sir.
Because their bench is so bad, Jack, I can have belief in what you're saying.
I can't believe that they'd even put her in, but I think they will.
The desperate times require desperate measures in the Democrat Party, Jack.
It's that old thing. Put me in, Coach. I'm ready to play. she's ready.
Call us and remind us, Jack.
As we like to say, her and Bill are ready to vacuum up more money for the personal Clinton empire.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Jack, great call, man. I appreciate it. Have a nice day.
Have a great day.
See you too, buddy. 790-2040 is the phone number. I think I might going to play a little bit of this lady from Washington University called Anne Marie Knott called Why Haven't You Caught COVID-19? I'm sure it'll be, you know, knocked out by Zuckerberg or, sorry, Google in about 4 seconds, but we'll see what we can do. So, Ed, spin us away. Freddie and the boys. That's what the show, that's all the show's ever been, has been Radio Gaga.
It is summertime, isn't it? I mean, if you go to school, it's summer break. I just put my headphones on and listen to Queen for like the next 2 months. Is that okay?
That's fine.
It's summer. Let's just do this. He's right.
All right. So if you missed the last segment of second hour, right before we talked to Brandon from the Blind Pig, I was going over a Washington Times article called "Why You're Not Going to Die from COVID," and really talked about the percentages of your chance of dying. Right. So if you're 85 and over in America as of May 16th, you have a 99.66 chance of surviving, of not dying from COVID. And total for the U.S., it's 99.98% chance of not dying from COVID. Okay? So the guy who wrote this, Richard Rahn, this article, okay, he talks about, and we're going to talk about Richard Rahn. It's a presentation by a professor from the University of Washington in St. Louis. I don't want to tell you who she is. Her name is Anne Marie Knott. She is basically, her research interests are art, research and development and innovation. She has been published about 10 times. She's like real deal in what she does. Okay. PhD from USC and an MBA from UCLA. PhD and her master's from UCLA in management. Now, and we are actually in the middle of trying to get her on the show. But so what I want, you got to pay attention to this. She does a 14-minute, we'll probably break it up in two sections here. This is her presentation on why you haven't caught COVID-19. So let's start. This is academic. This is her doing a 14-minute lecture. So pay attention and just stop looking at all the other junk. Just pay attention to this lady for a few minutes here. Ed, go.
Good afternoon. Thanks very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I miss seeing you all in person, and I'm hoping that today's talk will actually make it possible for me to see you again sooner. You probably believe that the COVID adventure began in Wuhan, China, but the COVID adventure that I want to talk about today actually began with Imperial College Report Number 9, dated March 15. This was the report that triggered the interventions in the United States and the United Kingdom. That report forecast that in the absence of interventions, 265 million Americans would catch COVID and 2.2 million of us would die. This forecast was based on an estimate for a parameter known as R-naught that they pegged at 2.4. The bulk of the report was identifying interventions that would bring R-naught below 1, which would reduce the number of deaths and flatten the curve. So the implicit message is that if R-naught is already less than 1, these interventions
She'll explain
were
R-naught in a little bit.
We now know that forecast was high by a factor of 20. The consensus forecast in the U.S. is that 120,000 Americans will die from COVID this year. And I think the public is left with the impression that this is a testament to the value of interventions. But what I want to argue instead is that this 95% decrease in the deaths actually stems from forecast error. And it's not that the models were wrong. It's that the models model the COVID cases, and they ignore or they miss the non-cases, which I think is where all the action is here. The first thing that I want to do to persuade you that this is about forecast error rather than the value of interventions is to take a look at flu deaths. Because if it's truly the case that interventions are effective, they should be equally effective at flu as at COVID. So I took a look at that, and what you can see is that flu deaths this year are actually higher than they were last year. Moreover, they're increasing over the period of intervention. So it's unlikely that the COVID decline is due to interventions. I mentioned R-naught earlier, and it's going to loom large in this talk, so let's make sure we understand what it is. R-naught is the basic reproduction rate of the disease. It's the number of people that one person will infect during the period that they're contagious. An underlying assumption when making estimates of R-naught is that everyone is susceptible to the disease. So there is a refinement of that known as the effective reproduction rate of the disease. This is taking R-naught and adjusting it for the people who are immune or become immune. If measured properly, R serves as a threshold between outbreaks that become epidemics and those that move towards extinction. The threshold for that is 1, as I've shown here. So we see extinction on the left-hand side, epidemic on the right-hand side. And what I want you to pay particular attention to is the location of flu and COVID.
She means extinction of the virus, not extinction of people.
The R-naught for COVID is estimated to be 2.4. This is curious because 50 million Americans catch flu each year, whereas only 1.5 million Americans have caught COVID so far this year. So how is it the case that COVID can be more contagious than the flu? How can its R-naught be 2.4 if flu is 1.3? This isn't just an academic exercise. Policymakers are using R-naught to make their opening and closing decisions, so it's important that we get it right. So I took a look at the models that were generating the R-naught estimates, and as I took a look at them, I realized they're all dynamic models, not a big surprise, but what's nice about dynamic models is that they reach a steady state. And it occurred to me it would be really nice if we could actually examine a real-world steady state. It then occurred to me we can. The USS Theodore Roosevelt appears to be a natural petri dish experiment of COVID. You probably remember this is the aircraft carrier where the captain was relieved of his command after an email leaked where he was requesting help from his superiors evacuating sailors from the ship after COVID broke out. I don't know how many of you have been on an aircraft carrier, but they're extremely claustrophobic. They are packed at a density of 1 million people per square mile. To give you a sense of that, that's closer to home. This would be like 90 people living in your house if you have an average size house. You can see here that there's no opportunity for social distancing. These guys sleep 3 high and very little space in between the berths. What's nice about this experiment is that we know quite a bit about it. There were 4,954 sailors on board. They were confined together for 15 days from the time of the first infection. They were all tested. 856 tested positive, 4,098 tested negative. This yields an infection rate of 17.3%, which is also known as the attack rate. So if we believe we've reached a steady state here in that COVID had a chance to fully propagate through the ship in a closed population, meaning nobody was getting on or off the ship, then we can compute R for that outbreak from the attack rate, which I've just told you is
17.3%. This is serious math on the air.
And when you do that, you get an R value of 0.48, which you recognize is below the threshold of 1, but even further below the forecast of 2.4 from the Imperial College report. What's most interesting is it appears that there's an 82% resistance rate. What this means, if true, is that 80% of us won't catch COVID, even if we live with someone who has it. Conveniently, the Roosevelt is not our only Petri dish. The Diamond Princess actually was called a Petri dish in the media at the time of its outbreak. It has characteristics very similar to the Roosevelt.
This is the cruise ship.
It has a slightly higher infection rate, 19.1% versus 17.3%, but the computed R is the same, 0.48. The main difference between the cruise ship and the Roosevelt is that 9 people died on board the cruise ship versus only 1 on the Roosevelt. And the reason for that is that the average age on board the cruise ship was 69, whereas the average age on the carrier is 19. And we've come to understand that the risk of dying from COVID is highly related to people's age, which is not uncommon for diseases. That's true of heart disease as well. About the time I finished my analysis of the ships, I came across an article where researchers had also examined the outbreak on board the Diamond Princess. And I thought, this is great. I can be done worrying about COVID. They will have arrived at the same conclusion that I had. But instead, they had an R-naught estimate of 2.3. So I said, what's going on? I took a look at what they did, and their estimate of R-naught came from the first 15 days of the outbreak. And boldly, they forecast forward how many new cases there would be over each of the next 10 days. So here's their forecast.
It's an upward line on a graph.
And here's the actuals. What you can see is at the end of 10 days, they're off by a factor of 2, which suggests there's something wrong with their estimate of R-naught. So these are smart people. It's not that they're wrong. It's that they're doing something differently than what I'm doing. And I wanted to understand what that might be. So to help us understand that, I want to remind you of some definitions. R-naught is a measure of the contagion under an assumption that everybody is susceptible to the disease. R, in contrast, takes into account the people that are resistant to the disease. The two are related in a very simple equation. So it's possible for R-naught to be 2.4 and R to be 0.48, so long as 80% of people are resistant to COVID. Note, my understanding is that 80% resistance is unusual. It would have to come from unrelated past infections or vaccinations, and I have absolutely no expertise in this area. All I can tell you is that 80% resistance matches the observations from the two ships, and it reconciles the two R estimates on board the Diamond Princess.
Yeah, let's do a break right now, 8:46 in the morning. I told you it's going to be very technical, but she's using numbers here in relation to what are we really talking about, right? And this is something that Dr. John Ioannidis from Stanford, he was kind of working with these numbers too, and his estimates from basically 50 days ago were playing out exactly what they thought. So this R-naught thing, she's really just talking about how, you know, what's happening is with the these Imperial Colleges and their horrible forecasting is it didn't take in the fact that there are people that are going to be immune to this thing. So when she's talking about the aircraft carrier, right, 4,500 people living at a million people per square mile density. And she said that 856 of them out of the 4,500 actually tested positive. They were together for 15 days after the first infection was detected. All right. And she said there was a 17.3% infected rate and there was one fatality on that boat. All right, so we're talking about 17% were infected out of 4,500 people. So what she's kind of saying here is that if you take in the immunity of what's going on, innate immunity of people to this disease for whatever reasons, then the numbers are not as bad as all these modelers are throwing at you. So let's go to break. We'll catch the second half of this. We have Anne-Marie Knott. She is a professor of Innovation and Research and Development at the University of Washington, St. Louis. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. All right, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson Show, 10:30 The Voice. Local news and talk. If you miss anything, KVOI.com. Podcasts of all of our shows. Myself, Tipping Point, Billy Buckmaster, any of our weekend shows, Steve and Jay in the evening at the Eye on the Bowl. Eye on the Bowl. And then, of course, the Tucson History Podcast with Mr. Greg, associate of Dr. Fleckenstein. I don't know if you guys know that or not. So we are listening to Anne-Marie Knott. She is a professor at the University of Washington in St. Louis, and she does research, development, and innovation there. And we are in the middle of trying to get her booked for an interview on this. But this is a presentation that she did recently, and it's used by the, May 13th. So it's even earlier. May 13th, Why You Haven't Caught COVID-19, and it's featured in Richard Rahn's Washington Times opinion piece that I gave you some of those stats from. Edward, please continue.
Scientists are in the business of developing theories and generating testable hypotheses from those so that you can actually tell whether the theory is valid or not. So in the case of COVID, if it's true that R naught is less than one, the testable hypothesis is that we should see extinction. So I took a look at that. What I plotted here is the new deaths per million population for all countries in which there have been more than 100,000 COVID cases. And what you can see, which is nice, is that new deaths have peaked in all of these countries. But what you also see is that we don't see second waves. So it appears that we're moving towards extinction. I didn't want you to think that I was cherry picking the 8 cases I showed you before. The reason I narrowed this at is because I wanted to actually see what was going on. But here what I've done is I've shown you little thumbnails for all countries with more than 5 million people. Below that, record keeping seems to be a little bit sketchy. And what you can see is basically the same thing. COVID seems to have peaked in most places, and there isn't evidence of second waves. So far, we've been talking about the risk of COVID on petri dishes and ships, but we don't live in petri dishes and ships. We live in cities, towns, and countrysides where we're naturally more spread apart. The average density in the U.S. is 1/10,000th that on the ship. So we have an opportunity to socially distance just naturally, and if you take that into account, the risk of catching COVID is 3%, or less than 3%, actually. This coincides nicely with one of the few studies of the forest. This was done by researchers at Stanford. They randomly sampled the population in Santa Clara County, California, where there's already interventions in place, and they found that there was a 1.5% COVID risk. So less than 3% in the absence of intervention, 1.5% in the presence of intervention. So I've just introduced intervention. Let's say a little bit more about that. I've got another natural experiment. Here what I'm doing is I'm comparing Sweden to Los Angeles County. They don't have much in common except for the fact that they're both 10.2 million people. Sweden has a very lax COVID intervention regime. LA County, on the other hand, is very restrictive. It's more restrictive than the state of California, which in turn is more restrictive than the U.S. as a whole. Surprisingly, Sweden has 2 times the number of cases for any given city density as LA County cities. But what I want you to pay attention to is the fact that this is the difference between 2 cases in 1,000 and 1 case in 1,000, not the difference between 810 cases per 1,000 forecast by Imperial College and half of that, which would have been 405 cases per 1,000. So I'm done talking about COVID risk, either with or without intervention. Now what I'm going to do is switch to economics. How much are the COVID interventions costing you? This is going to be exclusively the costs that are going to be passed on to you from the federal government in the form of higher taxes. So they're the costs associated with the bailouts and the stimulus packages to date, as well as the lost business income tax from the shutdown. Those costs work out to $880 per taxpayer at the current interest rates of 2.1% on the new debt. If interest rates revert back to where they were 12 years ago, this tax bill each year will double, if we introduce more bailout packages, this will increase. And if we continue the shutdown, this will increase. Of course, most of us will be willing to spend $879 to save a life. That's a no-brainer. But that's the wrong perspective. 2.8 million Americans die each year. And if we're going to be spending money saving lives, then we should think about what's the best use of our money. Currently, we are spending 50 times more per COVID life than we're spending per heart life. And we're spending 80 times more per COVID life than per flu life. This seems a little backwards because it looks like COVID may disappear because of all of the great things that are happening with vaccines, whereas heart disease and flu disease look to be with us for the foreseeable future. Let's bring this home. What to know and do about COVID? The first thing to know is that even without intervention, it's unlikely you'll get COVID, less than a 3% chance. The second thing to know, antibody tests are of little value if, in fact, 80% of us are resistant to the disease. That means 80% of us won't catch COVID, so we will never develop antibodies. Probably the most important thing is that the weight of the evidence is consistent with the disease moving towards extinction. 1.5 million Americans have COVID versus the 265 million predicted with an R-naught of 2.4. Furthermore, we look like we're already moving towards extinction. Deaths have peaked in most countries and there's not evidence of second waves. The 95% difference between the Imperial College forecast and the actual deaths is not due to intervention. Flu deaths are increasing over the intervention, which shouldn't be true if the interventions are effective. Second, there was no opportunity for intervention on the USS Roosevelt. These interventions are costing you $879 per year in new taxes.
All right, that will stop there. So here's the thing, okay? And then she says, urge your senators, representatives, governors, and mayors to reopen. So there's so much to unbundle here. We're going to have to do, hopefully I can do it with her live on the air. Okay, she's saying that they're looking at the numbers that COVID's heading towards extinction, according to the data, not heading towards second wave. She's also saying that Sweden and LA County are the same size, and LA County, with their restrictive, they had one death per thousand. Sweden had two deaths per thousand without destroying their country. I'm just saying, this is great data from this woman. We're going to be talking about it again, and hopefully with her live. Zach's coming up. Mark Kelly, wake up.